Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. Nestle into your seats and let the twilight wrap around you as we journey into a tale so bewildering. It defies all that we know about friendship, loyalty, and the digital landscapes that we navigate daily. In tonight's episode, we'll cover the harrowing story of two boys, Mark and John, entangled in a web that blurs the lines between reality and fiction. Growing up in Greater Manchester, Mark lived a life much like any other local teenager. His childhood was unremarkable, a tapestry woven from the threads of soccer matches, school, and friendships. He was never one for the spotlight, blending into the background with a sort of pleasant anonymity. Mark was your typical boy next door, but beyond the everyday routine lay a complexity within Mark that few could see. His home life was defined by the absence of extravagance, but the presence of loving working-class parents. Mark's parents, committed to their son's upbringing, instilled in him values of respect and kindness. These traits would later become both his strength and his vulnerability. Mark attended a local high school where he was neither at the top of the class nor at the bottom, achieving grades just good enough to blend in academically. He was the sort of student who raised no eyebrows, a boy whose presence was reassuringly constant in the hallways and classrooms of the suburban school he attended. It was during these formative years that Mark struck up a friendship with John. John was a shade different, a year younger, and with a quiet nature that stood in contrast to the camaraderie and noise typically found in the schoolyard. His olive skin, long, crooked nose, and dark, intelligent eyes set him apart in appearance, but it was his reserved demeanor that truly made him stand out. Yet there was an affinity that grew, an unspoken understanding that seemed to bring them closer together. Their bond was solidified in the digital realm, that playground of the modern age where avatars and screen names provided a refuge from the harsher realities of teenage life. The internet became their secret garden, a place to escape, to forge a connection free of the judgmental eyes of their peers. But little did Mark know that the quiet boy with an affinity for online worlds would soon entangle him in a web far more intricate and fantastical than any game they played. The warning signs were subtle, only noticeable in hindsight. John's aversion to reality, his preference for virtual worlds, the intensity with which he lived his digital life, all these were hints that their friendship was veering onto an uncharted path. The internet chats grew more intense, more frequent. There was something immersive about the way John engaged, almost as if he were painting a picture Mark couldn't see, composing a symphony he couldn't hear. Yet as John wove his narrative, spinning tales grandiose and captivating, Mark could not have predicted that these stories were but a precursor to a shocking reality that would unfold. In this chapter, looking back at Mark's early life, one can't help but wonder if things might have been different if the signs were noticed, if the earnest boy from Greater Manchester might have sidestepped the shadows that loomed just beyond the glow of his computer screen. But this was only the beginning, the first threads of a narrative that would twist and turn into a tale so bizarre, it would grip not just a community, but an entire nation. June 29, 2003, is a date that, for most, was just another day in the sunny calm of a greater Manchester suburb. But for Mark, that day is etched with darkness. The alleys of Goose Green were familiar territory, pathways he had tread countless times before. Yet on that particular Sunday, he found himself in a scenario that was anything but ordinary, a situation we now realize was a culmination of manipulation so extreme it bordered on the surreal. Mark and John had entered an alley with a dead end cut off abruptly by a steep drop. A hidden corner in a place where the unexpected like this just didn't happen. Mark had brought a knife with him that day, a 6-inch blade that they purchased together. John was unaware, or so Mark thought, as he carried out what Mark was convinced was a necessary mission. A mission that had been orchestrated by shadowy figures of their online chatroom world. "Trust me," Mark remembers telling John, repeating the words like a mantra, as if they would somehow make what he was about to do acceptable, or at least comprehensible. But nothing could justify the act that unfolded next. Mark plunged the knife into him, the disbelief in John's eyes torturing Mark. "I'm dying," he cried out, and the world seemed to stop with the weight of those words. In an attempt to silence him, desperate for the madness to end, Mark told him, "Shush! People will hear. Please be quiet." The words felt hollow, a feeble attempt to manage chaos. But there was no controlling this. It was then that the piercing scream broke from his lips. "You've killed me!" That phrase broke Mark even as he begged him not to let it be the last thing he said. Up to 20 eternal minutes may have passed before reality jolted Mark harshly, prompting him to pull out the knife and finally call for help, concocting a story of a madman attacker to the authorities. In the aftermath of the stabbing, a tense air of disbelief enveloped the otherwise peaceful suburb of Altrincham. The quiet streets, known more for their quaint shops and local community, became the center of a police investigation that would soon twist and turn through a maze of deception like something straight out of a crime novel. It was the idyllic setting of Goose Green, incongruous with the violent act, that baffled Detective Chief Inspector Julian Ross and his team. The facts appeared straightforward enough. A boy had been stabbed, his life hanging by a thread, and his apparent attacker was his close friend. But the deeper authorities delved, the more convoluted the narrative became. Initially, they were led to believe that a black-hooded, jean-clad madman in his early 20s had attacked John. At least, that's the story Mark relayed as he phoned in for help, his voice laced with panic. But urgency and truth do not always make companions, and the police were soon met with inconsistencies that pricked at the seams of Mark's story. This is where CCTV swung into focus. It closely tracked the boys, dismissing the twisted tales spun before officers. There was no madman. There was just Mark and John. As reality dawned, the once blurred lines began to sharpen, and the image of a knife-wielding monster was replaced by that of a 16-year-old boy. Despite the mounting evidence and stern faces of the law, he clung to his initial account with a perseverance that bordered on the tragical, seemed totally fictitious. Suspicions and theories abounded among the officers, who were no strangers to crime and its motives. Yet this landscape was foreign. It was digital, fraught with fables fit for a modern-day Grimm. 58,000 lines of text, in fact, had to be scrutinized. And what the bits and bytes revealed was an internet soap opera more entangled than the alley's dead ends. What emerged behind the digital curtain was John's elaborate tapestry of characters. Characters like Janet Dobinson, the supposed high-ranking Secret Service agent, and an assembly of figures pulled from the most grandiose of espionage thrillers, all originated from a single haunted soul looking for an escape, looking for control. The authorities' early judgments of a random, brutal attack unraveled, thread by digital thread, as the truth beckoned them into the virtual labyrinth created by John. How could a teenager orchestrate his demise at the hands of his closest friend? How could a bond that once offered solace spiral into a plot that nearly culminated in tragedy? So, as the investigation plodded on, police stood on the precipice of a legal novelty, not just in Britain, but perhaps the world. For they were untangling not just a case of attempted murder, but one of incitement, where the victim was also the architect of his violent fate, a case that dove headfirst deep into the often murky waters of the digital age and the vulnerabilities of the human psyche. There in the shadows of an inconspicuous bedroom in Greater Manchester, not all was as it seemed. For young John, the flickering screen of a laptop served as both a beacon and a canvas, illuminating his face while his fingers crafted a tapestry of fabrications. The boy, caught between adolescence and the all-consuming digital world, became a virtual puppet master, pulling at the threads of reality to weave his own web, a web of deception so vast it ensnared his best friend, Mark. As Mark navigated through his daily life, unaware of the undercurrents pulling him into the depths of John's imaginary world, John took to the keys with the same fervor a novelist dives into their story. As the world outside moved past daylight to dusk, the online personas hatched from John's mind came to life. Rachel West, Kevin McGregory, Janet Dobinson, and a cascade of others too numerous and intricate to distinguish from reality. Each of these characters had a role to play, each a strategic move in John's grand game. The unsuspecting Mark, devoted and lured by the allure of companionship, love, and adventure, was soon drowning in the narrative spun by his conniving friend. At one moment, he was the protector, the knight in shining armor for his digital damsel, Rachel West. When John decided to kill off the Rachel character, Mark was then a grieving lover. To Mark, these characters, no matter their digital origin, felt real. Their stories made his heart race with empathy, their plights moved him to action, and their instructions gave him a purpose he'd not known he craved. Isn't it fascinating how hungry we are for connection, for significance? How willingly we suspend our disbelief when presented with a narrative that offers us a chance to be a hero or a promise of love. John exploited that basic human longing, and Mark, with open heart and earnest intention, stepped right into the performance John directed. John's most compelling character, perhaps, was Janet Dobinson. A figure of authority and clandestine mystery, she claimed a high-ranking position within the British Secret Service. Dobinson's words were not just texts on a screen. They were commandments, directives, that Mark was all too willing to follow, believing, no, trusting, that they served a higher purpose, one that linked him inextricably to the fates of nations, a plot larger than life itself.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The chat logs would later reveal just how deeply ingrained each persona was in the unfolding event. So vivid were they that even the most experienced law enforcement analysts marveled at the complexity, at the ability of one teenage boy to maintain such distinct and consistent dialogues across dozens of characters. It was artistry of a dangerously deceptive kind. At the peak of his influence, John, as Dobinson, asked Mark to take drastic measures, pushed him to the brink of an unforgivable act, all under the guise of serving one's country. The instructions were clear and detailed. Kill John. Could Mark buy a knife? Could he follow through with a staggering request? The weight of these decisions lay heavy, the pull on Mark's conscience tearing at the seams of his friendship with John, the real John, whom he believed was in danger. The genius behind the deception was disturbingly apparent. John, the boy with the crooked nose and longing eyes, was himself lost, seeking validation and purpose through the avatars he created, breathing life into them with each keystroke. They were more than figments. They were extensions of his psyche, his deepest desires, and most twisted thoughts. John the storyteller, the creator of worlds, held within his grasp the power to manifest destiny and, unbeknownst to Mark, the power to obliterate it. Each message from John through these fictional characters was like a brick, building a virtual prison for Mark's mind, a cell made not of iron bars, but of whispered words and haunting lies. The digital pressure bore down with a weight heavier than any metal. It arrived daily, hourly, in pings and chimes that sang out from Mark's computer, a siren call to dive ever deeper into the plot that John meticulously orchestrated. The characters John created were diverse and many, each more compelling and demanding than the last. Agent Janet Dobinson, though non-existent, was a commanding presence in Mark's life. She demanded actions, dictated behaviors, and shaped a reality that was all-encompassing for Mark. The requests started small, but grew into an ominous crescendo that even cast a shadow on Mark's own mortality. Messages flooded his screen. Encrypt this message. Report your activities. Stay vigilant. Fiction, though they may have been, these instructions became Mark's truth. They were commands he believed he had to follow. There were characters of various ranks in a spy network that existed solely in John's creative labyrinth. This espionage story forged of code and keystrokes was compelling, sophisticated, and to Mark felt very, very real. Mark was led to believe he was a chosen one, watched by agents, trusted with secrets that could shake the pillars of the nation. The egocentric allure of being important, needed, even crucial to a cause, was irresistible. Despite all the anxiety and confusion this cloak-and-dagger tale brought him, there was a part of Mark that felt valued in this strange digital brotherhood, a feeling that perhaps anchored him to John's narrative. Yet, like walking a narrow beam, Mark had to balance on the tightrope of his double life. While the physical world around him carried on, his family life, his school commitments, the normalcy on display to the world, inside the computer screen, a storm of deception raged. There comes a point where the pressure gets too much and something has to give. For Mark, it was the very foundation of this digital illusion that began to crumble when the ultimate instruction came through, when the pressure transformed from an emotional weight into a directive that could not be ignored or reasoned with, when Mark was told he had to bring a life to an end. Not just any life, but the life of his best friend, the life of the very friend who, unbeknownst to him, was scripting his doom. Imagine the confusion, the inner torment. Mark was no cold-blooded operative. He was a teenager embroiled in a digital play whose final scene could not, should not, be enacted in the real world. Yet, in this uncomfortable space between the keyboard and conscience, Mark was about to take a step that could never be taken back, driven to the edge by a digital world whose gravity was all too persuasive. Listeners, what would you do if your reality was crafted by another? How would you wrestle with instructions that went against every fiber of your being? These are the questions Mark faced. Within a pressure that mounted not from the outside, but from within the confines of a screen. A screen that both connected him to a friend and ensnared him in the darkest corners of the human mind. As the days stretched into weeks, the series of events that would lead to the alleyway at Goose Green began to take on a darker, more foreboding tone. John's skill in the perverse craft of digital deception had found its ultimate expression in an elaborate, twisted plot that he laid out with meticulous precision. With the scene set, John worked his puppet strings, playing on Mark's loyalty, his sense of adventure, and his newly indoctrinated belief in the undercover world that John had conjured. Mark, taken in by tales of espionage and a fabricated hierarchy of Secret Service agents, found himself accepting unbelievable truths. His reality had merged with the illusory world that his friend had spun from thin air. And then came the instruction. It was posed as a question but framed as a command, one that seemed to spring from the highest level of national security. Could Mark carry out the act of killing his closest friend if it meant serving his country? The very question must have seemed absurd to Mark, but the influence John exerted through his cast of characters was potent. Mark underwent an internal battle, his sense of right and wrong grappling with his belief in the elaborate theatrics John had enacted. But the combat in Mark's mind was against an invisible enemy, one who already knew his every thought and emotion. The trap was set. When John, meshing reality with the unreal, intimated to Mark that he had a terminal condition, the plan took on an even darker shade. The emotional bait was laid out. This could be a mercy killing, an act of love, a sacrifice for a higher cause. Mark was given a number, an identity as a Secret Service agent, a mission that was to end in tragedy. It was a narrative woven so skillfully with promises of rewards, threats of national security breaches, and a loyalty to a friend turned victim that any last vestiges of doubt were silenced. Each step was laid out with chilling specificity. The purchase of the knife, the chosen location, the deceptive cover story to tell the unsuspecting bystanders or the authorities. Everything orchestrated down to the last syllable, the last pat on the back between conspirators, the last whispered word of reassurance that this act was for the greater good. In these messages, a promise was made that in his compliance, Mark would become a hero, recognized by the highest powers in the nation. The digital world John had built was a house of cards, with every character, every storyline resting on the next, in perfect balance, waiting for the moment when the illusion would either solidify into reality or crumble into chaos. In the end, it wasn't just about the manipulation or the act of violence itself. It was about how profoundly disconnected from reality one could become just by sitting behind a computer screen. It was about the power of the internet to warp a mind into complicity with its own self-destruction. Detective Chief Inspector Julian Ross stood amidst a cascade of chatroom printouts, a tangible mountain of evidence, shedding light on the murky waters of a crime that had seemed, at first, straightforward. It was a painstaking process, untangling the knotted threads of truth woven into an intricate web of deceit. You see, as the weeks turned into months, the authorities were grappling with the characters that emerged from the depths of these printouts. Characters who'd become fixtures in Mark's life through the screen's glow. There were 193 separate email addresses, and every new discovery only fed the confusion. The truth, it seemed, was a needle lost in a haystack of digital personas. Mark, the boy who had been securely tucked away in juvenile detention, clung to a silence deeper than the night sky. He confessed to the stabbing, justified only by the murmur of hearing voices. His reticence painted a stark image of a teenager lost in a labyrinth, one that he, or perhaps someone else, had created. The investigation's breakthrough came as a whisper, a repeated word that echoed across the digital chasm, the misspelling of the word maybe with a Y replacing the A. Yes, this unique variant of maybe was the linchpin, a simple misspelling used by John, but also by his other digital personas. It smacked of a singular mind, a common thread that pulled together the pieces of a bewildering puzzle. It was this discovery that led the police to make the startling connection. These online entities, these characters who had so thoroughly upended Mark's world, were all the creation of John. Imagine the scene when Mark sat in that courtroom and listened as the prosecutor spun the full tapestry of this tangled tale, a tale of which he was both a creator and a puppet. The girl Mark thought he had loved, Rachel, who he mourned and endlessly yearned for, was a fiction birthed by his friend John. No Kevin, no Dobinson, no loyal sisters or secret agents, just John and his piercing desire for connection. The realization was a gut punch to Mark's belief system. Every lie unraveled into a deeper truth about John, about the online universe, about himself. It swept over him, the betrayal, the heartache, the foolishness. The boy he'd considered a brother had staged the entire thing. The girlfriend he mourned never existed. The threats, the spy missions, all a cruel facade. The trust he'd put in these digital encounters shattered like glass under the weight of this devastating deceit. John's own emotional fallout was complex, a mix of relief and desolation. Here he was, caught in the dichotomy of his own making, desperate for escape, yet mourning the loss of the very world he wanted to flee. And therein lay the rub for John. The deception he wielded with the hope of breaking free had instead bound him more tightly to a reality he could no longer endure. In the aftermath, we're left with two boys, two lives forever altered by the double-edged sword of technology and their own entangled emotions. The mental turmoil, the deep-cut betrayal Mark must have felt, it's something most of us hope never to experience. Yet Mark lived it, his heart and mind, ensnared in a web that was now torn asunder. According to therapists, Mark's sense of reality could have been deeply shaken, molding a wariness that would endure far beyond the legal proceedings. The legal proceedings certainly made headlines. Mark and John, two boys who'd never have been thought capable of such a complex, tortuous plot, now stood before a judge. It was a unique case, with Mark pleading guilty to attempted murder and John, astonishingly, to inciting his own. It's a charge that had the court scratching their heads, an unprecedented twist in the country's legal narrative. The boys received probation, a lenient sentence arguing that both needed guidance and psychological care, rather than the harshness of detention. But the conditions were stringent, glaring indicators of the digital era's dangers. No unsupervised internet sessions, no contact between the two, and a curtain call on their twisted collaboration. The case shed a glaring spotlight on the shadows of the online world, igniting conversations on internet safety and the ease with which anonymity can be abused. The repercussions echoed beyond the personal. On a societal scale, the case strained the judicial balance, pitting privacy against the right to know, while two young lives hung, altered but unbound, on the scales. And so we're left to ponder Mark's psychological recovery, the imprint left on his trust and affections. What future awaits a boy deceived to the core? As we come to the close of today's chilling journey, it's important to reflect on the key points that have unraveled before us in this twisted tale of friendship, deceit, and the catastrophic power of the digital world. We witnessed how a seemingly innocent bond between two boys, Mark and John, escalated into a plot that would fit a gripping crime novel. except that it was tragically real. This story has laid bare the profound impact the online world can have on the real one, how it can shape perceptions, forge and destroy relationships, and, in this rare and extreme case, orchestrate an attempt on one's own life. The case of Mark and John serves as a stark reminder of the importance of internet safety, the strength of the human need for connection, and the complex psychology of adolescence. For more about this and all of our episodes, check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com